10 years later, I woke up alone in Duke's bed at 6 o'clock in the morning. His room was at the front of the house, so I had no view of the sea. I was looking west at America. There was no morning sun, no long dawn shadows, just dull gray light on the driveway and the wall and the granite landscape beyond. The wind was blowing in off the sea. I could see trees moving. I imagined black storm clouds behind me, way out over the Atlantic, moving fast toward the shore. I imagined seabirds fighting the turbulent air with their feathers whipped and ruffled by the gale. Day 15, starting out gray and cold and inhospitable, and likely to get worse. I showered, but I didn't shave. I dressed in more of Duke's black denim, and laced my shoes and carried my jacket and my coat over my arm, walked quietly down to the kitchen. The cook had already made coffee. She gave me a cup, and I took it and sat at the table. She lifted a loaf of bread out of the freezer and put it in the microwave. I figured I would need to evacuate her at some point before things turned unpleasant. Aunt Elizabeth and Richard, the mechanic and Beck himself, could stay to face the music. I could hear the sea from the kitchen, loud and clear. The waves crashed in and the relentless undertow sucked back out. Pools filled and drained. The gravel rattled across the rocks. The wind moaned softly through the cracks in the outer porch door. I heard frantic cries from the gulls. I listened to them and sipped my coffee and waited. Richard came down 10 minutes after me. His hair was all over the place, and I could see his missing ear. He took coffee and sat down across from me. His ambivalence was back. I could see him facing up to no more college and the rest of his life hidden away with his folks. I figured if his mother got away without an indictment, they could start over somewhere else. Depending on how resilient he was, he could get back to school without missing much more than a week of the semester, if he wanted to. Unless it was an expensive school, which I guessed it was. They were going to have money problems. They were going to walk away with nothing more than they stood up in, if they walked away at all. The cook went out to set the dining room up for breakfast. Richard watched her go, and I watched him and saw his ear again, and a piece of the puzzle clicked into place. 5 years ago, I said. The kidnap. He kept his composure, just looked down at the table, and then looked up at me and combed his hair over his scar with his fingers. You know what your dad is really into? He nodded, said nothing. Not just rugs, right?
No, not just drugs.
How do you feel about that?
There are worse things.
Want to tell me what happened 5 years ago? He shook his head, looked away.
No, I don't.
I knew a guy called Gorowski, I said. His 2-year-old daughter was abducted, just for a day. How long were you gone for?
8 days.
Gorowski fell right into line. One day was enough for him. Richard said nothing. Your dad isn't the boss here, I said, like a statement. Richard said nothing. He fell into line 5 years ago, after you had been gone 8 days. That's the way I figure it. Richard was silent. I thought about Gorowski's daughter. She was 12 years old now. She probably had the internet and a CD player and a phone in her room, posters on her walls, and a tiny, dim ache in her mind about something that had happened way in the past. Like the itch you get from a long-healed bone. I don't need details, I said. I just want you to say his name.
Whose name?
The guy who took you away for 8 days. Richard just shook his head. I heard the name Xavier, I said. Someone mentioned it. Richard looked away, and his left hand went straight to the side of his head, which was all the confirmation I needed.
I was raped, he said.
I listened to the sea pounding on the rocks. By Xavier? He shook his head again.
By Paulie? He was just out of prison. He still had a taste for that kind of thing.
I was quiet for a long moment. Does your father know?
No.
Your mother?
No.
I didn't know what to say. Richard said nothing more. We sat there in silence. Then the cook came back and fired up the stove. She put fat in a skillet and started heating it. The smell made me sick to my stomach. Let's go for a walk, I said. Richard followed me outside to the rocks. The air was salty and fresh and bitter cold. The light was gray. The wind was strong. It was blowing straight in our faces. Richard's hair strung way out behind him, almost horizontal. The spray was smashing 20 feet in the air, and foamy drops of water were whipping toward us like bullets. "Every silver lining has a cloud," I said. I had to talk loud just to be heard over the wind and the surf. "Maybe one day Xavier and Paulie will get what's coming to them, but your dad will go to prison in the process."
Richard nodded. There were tears in his eyes. Maybe they were from the cold wind. Maybe they weren't.
"He deserves to."
"Very loyal," his father had said. "Best buddies."
"I was gone 8 days," Richard said. "One should have been enough. Like with the other guy you mentioned? Gorowski? Whoever. With the 2-year-old girl. You think she was raped?"
"I sincerely hope not."
"Me too."
"Can you drive?"
"Yes."
"You might need to get out of here. Soon. You and your mother and the cook. So you need to be ready for if and when I tell you to go."
"Who are you?"
"I'm a guy paid to protect your father from his so-called friends as much as his enemies.
Paulie won't let us through the gate."
"He'll be gone soon." He shook his head.
"Paulie will kill you. You have no idea. You can't deal with Paulie, whoever you are. Nobody can."
"I dealt with those guys outside the college."
He shook his head again. His hair streamed in the wind. It reminded me of the maid's hair under the water.
"That was phony. My mom and I discussed it. It was a setup."
I was quiet for a second. Did I trust him yet?
"No, it was for real."
No, I didn't trust him yet.
"It's a small community," he said. "They have about 5 cops. I never saw that guy before in my life."
I said nothing.
"I never saw those college cops either, and I was there nearly 3 full years.
I said nothing. Mistakes coming back to haunt me.
"So why did you quit school, if it was a setup?"
He didn't answer.
"And how come Duke and I were ambushed?"
He didn't answer.
"So what was it? A setup or for real?"
He shrugged.
"I don't know. You saw me shoot them all."
He said nothing. I looked away. The 7th wave came rolling in. It crested 40 yards out and hit the rocks faster than a man can run. The ground shuddered and spray burst upward like a star shell.
"Did either of you discuss this with your father?"
"I didn't, and I'm not going to. I don't know about my mom."
"And I don't know about you," I thought. Ambivalence works both ways. You blow hot, then you blow cold. The thought of his father in a prison cell might look pretty good to him right now. Later, it might look different. When push came to shove, this guy was capable of swinging either way.